Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. This is The Run Through. I'm Chloe Mao.
And I'm Choma Nadi.
Now, today, what should you read, watch, and listen to this spring? It is Vogue's Culture Guide, and you should stay tuned for it. It is 50 degrees in New York right now and feels a little springy. And this is a perfect moment to be looking forward to a bouquet of spring offerings. But first, it's so wonderful, Fran, to have you back on the show, Francesca Ragazzi. Our beloved head of editorial content for Vogue Italia. And Choma and Fran are logging in from their respective Parisian hotel rooms. And it is Wednesday midday for me, Wednesday early evening for Choma and Fran. And I want to know, everyone here in our office was buzzing about the row this morning and how they serve bread and butter, but there was no social media allowed. And I sort of love that. I feel like, is that the ultimate quiet luxury? I went to the row, but no one can know.
What they did give us were these very chic Japanese notebooks to draw.
Oh, and Blackwing pencils.
Yes.
I love that. Blackwing pencils are very deluxe, $40 each.
They are. And I like that. I think it did make you concentrate on the clothes. And I felt less distracted by people raising up phones in front of me or trying to get a picture or standing up, you know, to sort of angle to get it. And then you're watching, then you find yourself like in this meta experience of watching the show through someone else's phone.
It did seem like a contrast to Glenn Martin's Diesel show, which had all of the viewers live streamed in on screens on the wall. So everyone could watch in real time and you were watching everyone else watch, which is sort of what you're saying, Chum, about usually just sort of watching the show through other people's phones. So I like how people are experimenting with people's engagement through social media, either blocking it or encouraging it.
Yeah, that's super interesting that it's getting more and more polarized. Either one or the other is almost more clear that it's either or.
Yeah.
It's even like, you know, speaking of strategy towards audiences, like even Bottega, I mean, it's still without a social media account these days is quite a statement. I mean, to amplify all the work and tell the story. But I understand both. By the way, Diesel was great. I really love Glenn's vision. Very democratic and inclusive.
We were just talking about the Saint Laurent show and how that's really bringing back the debate around naked dressing and how much nakedness is too much nakedness. But what other shows have we seen so far?
There was the row this morning. They also had green juice and else that they served, and madeleines. They always have madeleines as well.
Nice.
So bring it back to food, but just so you had the full menu.
I want Choma's just like rundown of what every show served food-wise.
And then we went to Dries, which was really beautiful color, I thought, for fall. I think often we've seen a lot of shows where it's just been a lot of black, you know, and I think obviously we're in a moment where people are focusing on the wardrobe and making clothes that people want to buy. And I think obviously people love black clothing, but it was a completely different proposition from Dries. It was all these kind of very soft pastel colors and a lot of texture and tinsel and glitter. And what I liked also was that he reinvented this idea of track pants, because I love wearing sweatpants.
You do love a fancy track pant.
I love a fancy track pant. And there were lots of there were sweatpants, which is even one step further for me. And then my absolute favorite show of the day was Undercover.
Tell us about it. That was Nicole's favorite show last season.
It was in a university hall, kind of nondescript, so the venue was quite pared back. But the soundtrack was incredible. It was someone reciting a, about talking about a woman who was a lawyer and just her everyday and what her life was like and her, you know, being a single parent and what she does on the weekends and how much time she likes to read. So it was almost like, it looked, sounded like an excerpt from a novel about, you know, a very ordinary woman's day with these clothes that had, that was, you know, part sweatpants, part evening dress. And then you had carrying her groceries in a bag and then her yoga bag. And you just kind of got the sense that this was what, like, how many tasks women have to do in a day, yeah, how many different faces and masks we have to wear to get through it. And it just felt like this is actually like this is what it means to be like a woman now. Like, these are the things that, you know, these are the clothes you want to wear and these are the clothes that will take you everywhere, right?
Right. I've never been to Milan Fashion Week. Is everything close by or is everything far away? What is, how difficult is it?
We were a bit unlucky, first of all, with the weather because it was raining nonstop.
But there was some, it was fun. I hadn't been to Milan in so many years and Fran was an amazing host. She introduced us to some new kind of modern cuisine. We had like a modern Italian lunch with all the heads of editorial. It was really fun.
Oh, that's fun.
But we saw a few strong debuts. It was a season of beginners. Like the Moschino. The Moschino was, the first collection by Adrian Appiolaza, who comes from Loewe, from many years at Loewe, and is the successor to Davide Renne, who had been announced, and then he passed, unfortunately, very prematurely a few weeks later that it was supposed to start.
Yes, it was very tragic that he died shortly after being announced as the next designer for Moschino. So Adrian was the new designer, and this was his first show for Moschino, which is always known for quite irreverent, surrealist, fun moments. And it seemed to deliver that, no?
Yeah, exactly. I think the Argentinian designer brought that sense of like messages of peace and joy and love that was exactly what was so dear to Franco Moschino.
You know, he didn't have long to make this collection at all. So, you know, I think it was like a good start, but I'm sort of curious to see, I think, really, the second collection is going to be a better indicator of where he can take things and where he can go. I had never been to a Mathieu Blasé Bottega show, and he's one of the first people that we interviewed for.
For the podcast.
Yeah, so it was a real kind of full circle moment. I was sitting opposite Raf Simons, which was amazing, and next to Matteo, who's the new creative director at Todd's. So it was, I was like in good company, and it was. It was great. It was actually interesting to see how many designers were on the front row at Milan. They all kind of supported each other. Simone Rocha was at Marni. And then obviously you had Raf Simons and Peter from Alaya, who obviously was in a relationship with Mathieu Blasé. And they still have a good friendship, I think, now. So, yeah. So I loved seeing his Bottega. I mean, you know, the craft work is unparalleled and there's just like a really cool attitude to the show and his coats. I mean, if I wanted to pick a new coat for fall, I'd definitely want to do one of his leather trenches. They were just so fab. Yeah. And obviously like Prada, my first Prada show, baby's first Prada show.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Tell me about the bows. Do we love the bows in person?
We love the bows. We love the bows. I love like all the sort of like tender and versus tough references, like the kind of more military inspired boots and the bows. And there were, what you couldn't see was that the back of the looks were really spectacular too. Mm. Little bustles on the back of the skirts.
Wow.
Almost like aprons with it fastened with big bows. And they always do it at the Prada Foundation, and the paninis are chef's kiss, really, really good. So I,
Choma knows what I want to hear about.
It was with like, I think it was with Rosaula and like fig jam. It was so good. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I feel like Prada, there is not too many intellectual analyses. It's just amazing clothes, and you always get so inspired to do some styling treats right away, like the hats and the way, you know, to layer sweaters one on top of the other, like little twist that you can feel you could wear right away after the show. Shoma and I also had a little vintage moment.
Yeah, we went vintage shopping.
Oh my God, tell us everything.
And actually, I was going to mention it because I bought a sheer kind of light blue kind of shift inspired by the Prada show. Because I was like, yeah, I want to layer this maybe over some jeans, or I don't know if I can do the bloomers that they had on the show with boots.
Ugh, can't wait to see Choma in bloomers this spring.
There's been a lot of like Bermuda shorts and... Right? Even today at Dries, there were lots of like shorts for winter again. Like, guys, like the short trend is just keeps on going.
The short trend goes long.
Short trend goes long. Boom, boom.
Ah, nice. I like that. I'm going to use it.
And then I've got a shout out, a British designer who showed. So each season, or for the last few seasons, Dolce has been inviting young designers to kind of use their space, use their resources. And I think it's a real, and give a platform to an emerging designer. And this year they chose to spotlight Febben, who's a designer from London, but I think her roots go back to Ethiopia and she has quite an international background. And she's all about texture and doing interesting treatments on fabric. So she had one print that was a version of the leopard print that Dolce is famous for, but she crafted it in tape and then photographed it. It sort of had this kind of crafty look, but it was really effective.
Yeah, that was great too, the silhouette and the fact that, you know, it was so much more inclusive than almost all the other shows. It's good that it comes from like the younger generation in which like the inclusivity in terms of body and shapes is much more natural maybe to represent. I have to say, I really loved as well what Max did at Ferragamo.
This is Maximilian Davis, who's the designer of Ferragamo.
Gave a reinterpretation of the Roaring Twenties, but in a very Maximilian way. And, you know, of course, among the dominant colors, there are always like the Caribbean yellow and olive green. And so it's good that it really capture the essence of an Italian house like Ferragamo, but mixing him with his own soul. So I think, you know, it's always very elegant and on point. And I always love Gucci, first of all, because Sabato, I think he has an amazing energy and he's so fun. And, you know, the experience felt right because the sound and those coats were so amazing, and the bags and the attitude of the girls, you feel something is growing and burning, and it was romantic as well. It's true that it was a lot of short as well, short jackets, short pants, so panties actually, a lot of dresses. We have seen less trousers than before.
I know, barely any trousers.
Yesterday at Saint Laurent, you know, it was transparent, but it was not that aggressive or sexy. I don't know what you thought, Shoma, but, you know, I read the press release that there was written this question, at what point purity can become provocative, because it was quite romantic. So I think there is a new sense of romanticism and romance in general around, even when we see a lot of skin.
I think it's a generational question, because I think some people felt that it was quite provocative and maybe they were part of an older generation. Personally, I still kind of clutch my pearls somewhat when I see so much skin. But I also understand that there's a younger generation of women who've grown up going out with you know, braless, not worrying so much about like this kind of, this idea of like really owning your body and you know, and I do think that there's a generational shift happening, and that show really got people talking about that.
This is what we are trying to tell, the story we are trying to tell with our new issue. The March cover of Vogue Italia portrayed Taylor Russell. She's naked, but there is a sense of purity and romance poetry in the pictures.
Yes, Fran, I'd seen your cover, but not, you know, as an official cover yet, and it's so amazing. Can you describe it for listeners who aren't seeing it?
The headline is quite interesting because it says "Subject of Desire." So mm-hmm. the idea that the woman, because she's naked on the cover, just holding a dress without wearing the dress. And it was all about the idea of deciding what to do with your body a bit. That brings us back, actually, in the 70s with the protest around, you know, women having to make choices themselves for their body.
Great. Bye, Fran. Good luck on your Parisian commute.
Thank you so much. Shyam, are you going to Balmain?
Yeah, I'll see you at Balmain. And we have to do a vintage day at some point.
Exactly.
The run-through will be back in just a moment.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
And we're back.
Now, what are Vogue editors excited to watch, read, and listen to this spring? Listen up. Taylor Antrim and Chloe Sciama write about and edit cultural coverage for Vogue, and they are just voracious consumers of all cultural mediums, and it was a thrill to hear their rundown of all the things that they are looking forward to this spring and have already sampled and think that we should be watching or reading or listening to. So let's jump right in, and we are starting with TV and movies.
I'll wait to hear it.
Taylor and Chloe, welcome to the run-through of Vogue.
Hi, Chloe.
We are...
Hi, Chloe.
Hi. Taylor's been practicing that in the mirror.
No, I'm here with two Chloes. This is great.
Taylor and Chloe are our resident culture experts, two of several, I would say. We are very excited to speak to you guys today about... What is our spring preview? I was sort of excited this weekend that the Times did their big spring preview, and I feel like it's that moment when everyone's looking at the Broadway lineup and yeah. book lineup.
I love a culture preview. It's one of my favorite sort of like packages that still exist in media, you know?
Well, Taylor, you went to the Sundance Film Festival.
I did. In January, I went out to Utah to check out some 2024
and
movies.
And I hope you saw a lot of movies because you didn't ski at all, which I thought was very sad.
I didn't ski. I mean, we don't have to get into the decision of whether you ski
no,
or
please,
see movies
when you're
there.
Let's yeah. not.
No, I went for 2 days. This is the thing I do. I will go to a festival and for 2 days, I will try to see 4 movies a day. I have done 5, but that is truly a
like, wow.
a killer if you sit through 5 movies. But I saw a lot of movies, and I think there's some really exciting movies that are coming out. I picked 3 that I think they're just about to come out, and only one of them was at Sundance. Because the thing about Sundance is you see movies, a lot of them are small, and are not sold yet. So two of my favorite movies from Sundance, this coming-of-age film called Dee Dee and a movie called Good One, which is about a young queer teenage girl going on a hiking trip in the Catskills with her father and his grown friend. They're definitely going to come out, but it's not clear when. So okay. I think it's too early to kind of put those on your calendar. But the thing that I think is really exciting about this moment and Sundance sort of like – you know, is the lead up to this moment is like we've gotten through January and most of February, which are doldrums, particularly in the movie industry. Anyway, we've shaken all that off and suddenly there are like a lot of things to see, a lot of things to see in movies and TV. So for movies, I would say the really big news is that on Friday, Dune Part 2 opens. And I am here to tell you that I think Dune Part 2 is going to make practically as much money as Barbie. I mean, this movie is such a spectacle.
Over the moon for Dune.
Over the moon for Dune. I knew it. I put it in my notes. I was like, what will it take to make Chloe go see Dune Part 2? And I couldn't come up with an answer. I couldn't come up with an answer. Maybe Timothée.
Nope, not happening.
Zendaya?
Nope.
Oh, I have one other idea. Javier Bardem.
Oh, I do love him.
There you go. He's really good in it, too. He's one of these like, desert dwellers called Freeman. I know you almost choked on your water. I'm kind of like, the utter sincerity of this almost 3 hours sci-fi.
Did you, like, read the Dune books?
I didn't, but I am of the age
that could have been your vibe.
I can picture them on shelves and on airport sort of paperback stands. And I remember thinking, like, these books are, like, as difficult as James Joyce. Like, that was the vibe when you were growing up in the 80s and seeing these books around. This movie's really fun. It's directed by Denis Villeneuve, who also directed Dune Part 1.
And I saw him in the cafeteria yesterday with a tray with, like, a salad bar bowl runneth over, and he was flanked by a publicist and someone from the talent group.
You always know when people are visiting from outside Condé Nast when they're carrying trays. Yes, it's a total giveaway. Anyway, yeah, total self-seriousness with this movie. And I would say for people who saw Dune Part 1, which is actually quite slow moving, and it was very visually overwhelming and cool, but maybe a little boring. Okay. Like, this movie is visually overwhelming, cool, and not boring.
Can you see Part 2 without having seen Part 1?
Ooh, good question.
That's a really good question.
Because I'm not seeing either.
Can you see neither and just catch up on, like, Monsieur Spade until, like, Easter? The answer is yes.
Well, I will say what I am extremely caught up on, for better or worse, is the Dune press tour, because it has been an insane fashion rollout.
From mainstream to niche, I really want to talk about this Italian movie called Io Capitano, which actually opened last Friday and is one of the nominees for international feature film at the Oscars.
Okay.
I set myself a fun challenge every year, which is to watch all the nominees for the international category and do a little piece about them on Vogue.com. And this one really blew me away. And I think...
And everyone can read that piece.
Yeah, they sure can.
At the link in our article today.
I think it's a dark horse to win. I actually think The Zone of Interest, which is Jonathan Glazer's Holocaust drama, is sort of...
Oh, that's a foreign film?
Correct.
Okay.
Because it's German language spoken throughout.
I see.
So I think that one is actually going to win, but I wouldn't be surprised if Io Capitano sort of sneaks in there. It's directed by an Italian named Matteo Garrone, who is very well known for a gritty crime drama called Gomorra, which was from 2008. And this is a movie about two teenage Senegalese refugees who try to make the journey from Dakar to Italy. And it's extremely cinematic. It's playing in limited theaters only in New York and Los Angeles. But if you're in either of one of those cities, I really urge you to see it and it was actually filmed in the Sahara Desert and on the Mediterranean Sea. And it's quite harrowing in places, but it has such a warmth and humanity that I really think it's a discovery of the year. So Io Capitano. And I want to mention one more movie, which is coming out very soon, that you can put on your calendar. It comes out in 2 weeks, and it was a Sundance sort of buzzy debut. It's called Love Lies Bleeding. Very strange movie, but it is, I think, kind of a must-see, and there's been a lot of debate.
Is it a reference to the Elton John song?
No, not at all. I don't think it is. It's directed by this young British female director named Rose Glass, and her first movie was a horror movie called St. Maud, and this one is like a Thelma Louise for 2024, even though it's set in like 1989 New Mexico, like trashy,
so it's not
neon-lit, like, female bodybuilding world. It's very bizarre. It's very sexy. It's sort of a bloody revenge story. It stars Kristen Stewart and a actress I was not familiar with named Katie O'Brien, who's amazing, and she's the bodybuilder in it. Hmm. And you sort of have to see it to believe it. It just goes full tilt. It really knows what it's about.
When is that out?
March 8th. So Dune Part 2 this Friday, Io Capitano, which is out now, and then Love Lies Bleeding on March 8th. Those are three movies to look forward to.
I'll see two of three.
You'll see Love Lies Bleeding?
TBD.
I'm dying to know what you think, actually.
We'll see.
You almost sold me on Dune 2, which is definitely not my thing either, until you said I had to see the first one, which
I know,
makes
that's
it
a problem.
Quite a commitment. But
it's on Netflix right now.
Okay.
Okay, well, yeah.
My free 7 hours.
Yeah.
Exactly. We devote so many hours to middling TV, though. I don't know why
it's
we can't.
True.
You
know.
I know.
Yeah,
I
it's
think
really
about
true.
That all the time. Chloe, what series are you...
What,
that
TV
are not
series?
Middling, oh, are you watching?
Well, I would describe this as kind of middle brow, but I really enjoyed One Day, the adaptation of
oh,
the David Nichols.
Oh, people love that.
Yeah, I didn't want to like it because I think it's a okay book and a not great movie from 10, 15 years ago starring Anne Hathaway. And then I watched it and I was completely taken with it because I think the chemistry between the two leads is amazing.
I know, people are
and
just
surprising.
All over. This was a huge... Choma told me everyone in the UK, the only thing they're talking about is this movie.
That is sort of funny and cute because it's sort of sappy and like a little saccharine, but also really charming and kind of took me by surprise.
Well, I'm really into Shogun and I really urge people to give this one a try. And my advice is I'm really into the fact that platforms like Hulu and Apple TV and HBO are releasing shows the old-fashioned way, which is like they put out maybe two or three episodes and then make you wait week to week to week. And that's how...
Oh, so it's like a mini binge.
Yeah, well, it's not a binge.
It's a best of both worlds.
Like Netflix still gives you the whole season in one go. And I find that quite overwhelming, actually. And so does Prime, I think. But Shogun, which is an FX Hulu production, is coming out with two episodes tomorrow. And then it's week to week to week, and it'll run. It's 10 episodes running through April. It really delivers, but I would advise people to make sure you suspend judgment until you've gotten through the second episode. So again, it's a little bit of a time commitment. Each episode is about an hour.
Oh, no, I'm excited about that.
It's 1600 Japan, based on the James Clavell 1975 novel that was like 1,200 pages.
I read it before I went to Japan when I was 15, and
that's
I still remember
crazy
it.
That you read that.
It gives you a lot of history about a very specific moment in Japan.
Anyway, it's sort of Game of Thrones meets like War and Peace or something. I mean,
it's very readable.
It has a ton of characters, and this really foregrounds the Japanese characters. There is an English character, but this one really foregrounds the Japanese characters who are all these like 5-6 feudal leaders who are warring, you know, who are vying for the throne of Japan. I think it's going to be a big show.
Has anyone watched The Regime? I'm really excited about that.
I have. I watched that last night. I watched the first episode last night.
Okay.
So The Regime is Kate Winslet, our lovely Kate Winslet, who is in full tilt comedian mode. Like, this show is so funny and over the top.
Well, she was funny in her Vogue cover story. I mean, she has it in her. She just
totally.
Doesn't get those roles a lot.
Totally. And she can do anything. But this is her, like, full tilt. She plays the authoritarian leader of a fictional middle European country, sort of like a place.
Is like, this like Putin inspired or Orban inspired?
They're being very sort of quiet about, like, well, they're not saying it's inspired directly by any country, but you're thinking you're in like Georgia or Azerbaijan or something like that. It's kind of a tin pot dictator type person.
Okay.
And it's written by Will Tracy, who wrote The Menu, which was that sort of very fun killer chef movie from like a year ago.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited.
I have one more show to mention, which is the fact, this is a funny thing. I have to say, you mentioned Drive to Survive in the Vogue offices, and like 16 people come gathering and saying like, oh my God, when is the next season coming out? And season 6 came out just this week, and it is so fun.
People come out of the woodwork in this office for that show in
yes.
a very surprising and dramatic way. It might be the most unifying show in the office.
I mean, I was watching it, and my wife saw me watching it, and she was like, what is that? Is that F1 show? And then all of a sudden, she was like on season 4, being like, where is season 5? We need good shows. And there's been so much gloom and doom about like the strikes and everything means that this year is going to be like very thin on the ground for movies and TV. But so far, I would say we're off to a good start. There are a lot of things to watch.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Chloe, you read more books than anyone I know, which
yeah,
is
over to books.
You also have more children than anyone I know, so it's particularly remarkable.
I've been reading a lot, but I was going to highlight three books that are actually out already, so they're not super springtime preview books, but you can read them now. And then I have a couple to point people towards in terms of looking out for stuff. The first one, it came out in January. It's by a writer named Dolly Alderton, who wrote a novel a couple of years ago called Ghosts, which I feel that I probably described her this way. I think she's been described this way many times afterwards as like a modern day Nora Ephron type. She's very kind of like feels a little bit, and I don't mean this in a pejorative sense, like she's writing a rom-com script, but in a just like delicious way. This novel's written by the perspective of a man, and she gets into his psyche as the member of a couple, the half of a relationship that has been broken up with, and he does not want that to have happened. And so it's just like a fun modern day set in London. She's a British writer, romance kind of comedy, I would describe it as, very easily digestible, but like it's kind of nutritious junk food. Like you feel really good about consuming it, but you're also very happy to be consuming it. It's called Good Material. And he is a stand-up comic, so I think that's kind of a play on the fact that
he's been given
good material from his breakup. The second is a book by Leslie Jameson, who's a very well-known essayist, I would say. She's also written at least one novel. But this memoir is about the breakup of her marriage. It's called Splinters. But it, too, is kind of a punning title in that it's also about becoming a mother and having a part of yourself splinter off.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually more kind of about different kinds of love and how you process them, I guess, and the kind of consuming love of motherhood, which plays out for her at the same time that her marriage is kind of beginning to fall apart.
I have to say, I read the excerpt in The New Yorker and I loved it. I couldn't put it down. I want to get the book now.
A page turner. I mean, it sounds kind of depressing and dark, but it is.
No, it's very good. I really liked it.
Extremely compelling and, you know, unbelievably fair for a book that is about kind of a very painful breakup. It feels respectful. And I think that's kind of just a testament to her skill as a writer that she's able to,
so hard to
see
do.
Nuance and perspective. And then the third one, to go even darker seeming, is called Grief is for People, and it's a memoir also about grief, written by Sloane Crosley, who's also like a very well-known essayist and has written, like Leslie, for Vogue magazine. And that is about the death of her very good friend, who was a well-known figure in the publishing world. It's also about the loss of a piece of jewelry that was stolen from her apartment in a random burglary. But despite that grim-seeming premise, I would describe it as almost a comedy. It's kind of written about, like, the twin pursuits of explanation, both in terms of like losing a friend you love dearly before his kind of natural time, and then losing something that is just so totally material. And like she almost goes off on these sort of adventures that are filled with hijinks in order to try to get this necklace back. So those are three books that are actually out now and that I really loved. And then Adele Waldman, who hasn't written a book for maybe 10 years.
I really liked this one.
Has her first novel in that much time coming out. And it's set in a big box store. And Taylor and I both read it.
It's called Help Wanted.
Yeah. And we had kind of a similar experience where you're like, am I really reading an entire novel set in like the kind of packaging department of a big box store? And then it also becomes like a page turner.
Total page turner.
Hard to put down.
Did she work in a big box store?
She did. Yeah.
It's a good sort of survey of like the American economic moment, too. I mean, particularly what working class people are feeling in the country right now. I really felt like I was getting a glimpse into that psyche. It's set in a depressed town in upstate New York. And yeah, just like you, Chloe, I found it quite involving once it got started.
And then Miranda July, the beloved filmmaker, has a novel out.
Oh, my God.
I haven't read it, but Taylor has.
This book is crazy. If you want to read about a midlife crisis and some very like out there kind of explicit sort of sexual awakening scenes, then go for this book. It's called All Fours, and it comes out in May, I think, right?
Yeah.
Super funny. Very droll.
Should we talk about theater at all?
Yes.
What's happening on Broadway this
There's
spring?
Definitely a lot of good stuff. I just saw Appropriate, which is the Brandon Jacob Jenkins play starring Sarah Paulson, and it also has Corey Stoll and Elle Fanning in it right now. An amazing lineup of actors. And I, the others...
That's number one on my list, I have to say. Yeah. I think it looks very... I heard it's fantastic. It got rave reviews.
It is great. And it is also one of those shows, unfortunately for maybe our podcast listeners who are not based in New York or going to New York anytime soon, where you really feel like this couldn't be a movie. There are certain kind of plot twists where you feel like, you know, you catch your breath because you're in the theater and it takes place. I've felt like that only a few times, really, seeing plays.
And Sarah Paulson is great, isn't it?
Sarah Paulson is amazing. And she's like on stage, you know, 95% of the time, and is like truly a true to force. Actually, adorably, when I saw it, she and Elle Fanning broke character and they just had like a total giggle fit.
Aww.
But it's a testament to the show that like once they reined it in, you were totally with it again. It didn't really break the kind of impact of the show.
Then there's The Wiz, which Vogue is very excited about.
Yeah, probably opening very soon if previews haven't begun yet.
The one that I'm really excited to see is Cabaret.
Yeah. It's a complicated story because it opened pre-pandemic in London. I think it was probably intended to go to New York, and it's only coming now to New York. But it also, I believe, like reopened in London
right before.
Yeah,
it's still going in London. That's right.
Yeah.
I see.
It's a huge smash in London, and it looks like it's going to be a smash here.
And I have actually talked to people who've seen it and said they were not huge Cabaret fans. They didn't. There are some people who are enormous fans and will see any production, and even those who didn't really consider themselves huge fans thought it was fantastic. So
that's
I'm excited
exciting.
To see it.
And then everyone's very excited about Suffs.
Yeah.
Which is written by Shayna Taub and is thought to be, I mean, I feel like it's quite reductive to call it like the female Hamilton, but that is what people are calling it. It's about the suffragette movement and it's
musical.
A musical. It opens in April.
Can I add another depressing sounding one to the mix, which I love?
What's it called? The one that we just wrote about?
We didn't write about it yet.
Okay.
I have written about it in the past. It's called Mary Jane. It's by Amy Herzog, who's an amazing playwright. I really think she's incredible. And it's starring Rachel McAdams. And it is about a mother caring for a very sick child.
Oh, good
but
God.
It, too, is kind of funny in various times. And it's not so much about that experience as, like, the community that this character builds around it. And I thought it, when I saw it back in 2017, was fantastic. So I'm excited to see that on Broadway.
And off-Broadway, what's getting a lot of attention is Ally, The Ally.
Yes.
At the Public Theater, which opened this week, I think.
Yeah, a complicated play by Itamar Moses, I think I'm saying his name correctly, who wrote The Band's Visit, which people loved on Broadway a couple years ago. I saw that and loved it. This one is different, sort of a campus drama. He wrote it prior to October 7, but it is... involves themes of Israel and Palestine and is like become kind of, I think, inadvertently topical. I've heard actually they've kind of like rewritten the ending. We actually reported a piece that kind of talked about how they, I don't know, rewritten is probably too strong, but like workshopped the ending a lot, even like in the immediate days and weeks leading up to the opening, just to try to hit the right note.
And speaking of the Public, Hell's Kitchen is moving to Broadway from the Public.
Yep.
Which Marley loved and wrote about in the magazine.
Yeah, that's the Alicia Keys musical, really the biography of her life.
I took my in-laws for the holidays, and we all loved it. It's very rousing.
I'm excited about the Olivia Rodrigo tour, before you sneer at me, because she's playing four nights at—
It's a little creepy how much you like
her.
No,
wait. I told you to stop. I told you to just like, have some restraint before you make fun of me, because my daughter, who is a huge Olivia Rodrigo fan and is age-appropriate to be an Olivia Rodrigo fan, her birthday coincides with the first night
at
Madison Square Garden, and Vivi and I are going.
Oh.
I know.
You don't work at Vogue for nothing.
I'm so excited. We went to her show at Radio City.
I remember that.
And it was such a fun night, and Vivian knows all the lyrics to all the Olivia Rodrigo songs, and we really like Guts, and I think the tour is getting like incredible reviews already. It just started in Los Angeles this week, and all the reviews were like through the roof about her performance, so.
We love to hear it.
We love to hear it. Big fans of Olivia.
She's super charming.
Yeah.
All right, Taylor and Chloe, thank you for a wonderful spring preview. We have a lot to catch up on. Or I have a lot to catch up on.
Thank
They've
you.
All read and
Yeah, thank
seen
you.
Everything.
It was fun to be here.
Thanks.
And that's it for today's episode. See you next week.
Au revoir.
Ciao, ciao. The Run Through with Vogue is a production of Condé Nast. The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns, with engineering from Jake Loomis, Gabe Quiroga, and James Yost. It is mixed by Mike Kutchman. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio. everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
From PRX.